This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from SEP China. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, and the only thing cheap at the gas pump is me. My co-host is John Pasden, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and he doesn't have hypochondria, but he's scared he'll get it. How long can you use Chinese before your brain says enough? John and I are going to talk about endurance in Chinese and how to build stamina and what to expect as your Chinese progresses to the next level. Interview is with Tyler Chrysler, who moved to China to teach English and 14 years later is creating social media content in China. All this and more, let's get to it. Hello, everyone out there. We're pleased to be with you. I'm Jared Turner, joining you for our wonderful podcast today.
And this is John Pasden. I am in Shanghai, China, where we're no longer under lockdown. How's it going?
All right, John, you've emerged from your cave, which is your apartment. How is it now?
Yes, restaurants are not open. Gyms are not open, so it's not really normal, but whatever, life goes on.
So you're just like aimlessly wandering the streets, like zombies in search of brains? Or what's this like?
Get your takeout, take it home. Yeah, pretty much.
It sounds delightful. Wish I was there.
Thank you.
Okay, today we are talking about learning Chinese. Hey, imagine that.
Right, and today the aspect that we're going to cover is related to how long your lessons with your teacher are, how long your study sessions are. And if we're talking about lessons with teachers, specifically one-on-one lessons, because those can be the most tiring, and that's one of the things we're talking about.
That's right. And I will say, John and I, we had a little back and forth on this. I like to expand that even a little bit, saying how long can you even stay in Chinese, and whatever that is. It could be lesson, study session, test, reading, whatever it is. So, yeah, a little bit about what? Language endurance? How would we phrase that, John?
Yeah, language endurance, stamina.
Mm-hmm.
It's something you got to work on at some point.
Yeah, it's kind of like, Rocky. He's out there, running and taking hits to the chest and stuff, building up for the big fight. But we have to do this as well for learning a language, in this case, Chinese.
All right, so to illustrate the point, let me give you a few examples of ways that you could be spreading out your studies. Okay, suppose you're doing 4 hours of lessons a week. All right, so in example one, you're studying 6 days per week. You're studying for 10 minutes at a time, spread out throughout the day. So 8 a.m., 12 p.m., 4 p.m., and 8 p.m., but only 10 minutes each time.
Yeah, maybe you got your flashcard app and you maybe you got someone you're just speaking with a little bit here or there in Chinese, something like that, right?
All right, yeah, but it's 6 days per week and you're doing it 4 times a day, 10 minutes each time. It's kind of a lot to manage.
Well, at least kudos on the frequency, right?
Yeah, frequency is good. All right, so second example. You're studying 4 days per week, each time for 1 hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, third example. You're studying 2 days per week, each time for 2 hours.
Mm.
That's getting a bit long, right? And finally,
yeah.
Example four, you study 1 day per week, but for a 4 hour marathon session.
Holy shnikes.
All right, so I think you can see that, the way you break this down is going to have like some serious effects on your energy levels. And also, depending on your level, it might just be totally impossible.
Yeah, that's right. And I think what you're addressing here is that concept of endurance. How long can you be speaking or learning or studying or whatever and interacting in Chinese before your brain feels full?
Yeah, so that first example where you're studying 10 minutes at a time, you can imagine when you first start learning Chinese and like every sound is so foreign, like you get kind of fed up with it pretty fast. So like a 10-minute study session seems kind of reasonable, right?
Yeah, it's not bad, and it definitely would not discourage that, right?
Yeah, and then imagine just as a total beginner doing 1 hour lessons. You might have done this. And, being in the target language, either speaking, listening, looking at characters or something for a whole hour straight. So as a beginner, that's rough.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of those aspects about being a beginner and being in that environment or trying to study or speak or whatever for an hour is that there's a lot of struggle for
in those early stages. And so it's almost like could be like an hour long struggle session, right?
Yeah. So like struggling to remember what you just heard 5 minutes ago, struggling to say a sentence, struggling to get your tones right. Everything feels like a struggle and it's just exhausting.
I got to amend that, John. Struggling to remember what you learned 2 seconds ago, right?
Yeah, might be if you're a total beginner. Okay, so to go back to those examples I gave where in the beginning you're doing 10 minutes a time, 4 times a day, like that's not very practical for a lot of people. But for beginners, you do need shorter sessions. And it's going to be natural for you to do them longer and longer as you start to acquire more language. And like in the very beginning, when you know nothing, you can actually learn a lot in 10 minutes because it's all new. Or 20 minutes, you can learn a lot. 30 minutes. But it's going to be natural for you to want to build endurance and able to have a longer conversation. So, you know, to be able to do 30-minute lessons or even an hour.
Exactly. And so this is something that, you know, comes as you progress in your language learning experience. And I think what really is, John, as we're talking about this, it's almost important to like address that aspect of levels, right? So you're at a beginner elementary level, your ability to stay in the language, it's not robust for, you know, you don't have as much stamina or endurance in Chinese. But for someone who's more advanced, right, it's maybe, you know, being in half an hour in the language, it could be meiwenti, right? No problem.
And also, as you get better, you're going to find those super short sessions to be kind of unfulfilling. Like when you can actually hold a conversation, 10 minutes is just like nothing, right? So like you start to crave the challenge of being able to do more with what you've acquired. And this is true across different skills. So, you know, you can listen for longer, you can speak for longer, you can read for longer, and you can write for longer if you're writing.
So, John, I bet everyone listening here can relate to some aspect of this, at least even if they're advanced, they can say, oh, yeah, I remember this point when I was like, oh, it was really hard for me to, you know, stay in the language, but how? But I'm sure everyone is asking, well, how do I improve my stamina in the language? How can I be speaking Chinese and not get so tired or feel like it's a burden?
All right, so you got to keep pushing, right? So like I was saying, you might start with 30 minutes and then later on bump it up to 45 minutes or an hour. And it's always going to seem really rough in the beginning. And if you have a good teacher, then they're going to understand this and they're going to do what they can to make it easier on you. So if you have a teacher who's just like talking and talking and talking at you for the whole hour and you hardly say anything, then that's like a whole hour of listening straight, and that's rough. But if it's broken up with different types of activities, little breaks, maybe little English here or there, so it's not entirely in Chinese, then it's going to be a lot more manageable.
Yeah, and I think it's great as well to think about this and divide it almost into two sections, right? You got, you know, oral and written, right? And so the oral things, yeah, you talked, as John, the example you gave there about, you know, listening for an hour. Well, it actually can be a little bit, you know, a better experience if there's more interaction, right? So you're having, you're speaking and listening for over a period of an hour as opposed to just only doing one. It allows you to have that little breakup in the activities which you're doing and get a little more interaction.
Right. And if you want to keep going higher and higher, then it makes sense to keep pushing and not just think that 1 hour is all you ever need. So if I can give some examples from my own life, I did do my master's in Chinese here in Shanghai, and this was a test of endurance for me on many levels. So for example, when I was prepping for the entrance exam to get into the program, I had to write essays. I had to write 2 essays for like an hour each back to back, and it was all handwritten. And you don't just go straight to being able to write nonstop for 2 hours if you've never practiced it, right? I really had to build that endurance, and I did lots of writing practice in order to get to that point. And then, you know, in the same way, I had to read lots of stuff to get into the program, you know, Chinese articles on linguistics, and then the program made me read a whole bunch of other stuff, which was also academic papers, so fortunately I'd already built up that so I could handle it. So if you're trying to keep leveling up, then there are going to be challenges that are going to make use of your endurance. Like, for example, that listening for an hour. Like, maybe you don't want to listen to someone drone on for an hour, but if you want to watch a movie, that's, you're watching too, but that's also listening for like over an hour straight, unless you chop it up, right?
That's right. Now, I would say that there's one important aspect of this that also can help you build this endurance. And what I point out here is the comprehensible aspect, comprehensible input. Like if you are sitting down and watching a movie, but you know your level is way low and you can't understand like 80% of what's going on, it's not going to be a very pleasant experience, and you're probably going to tune and check out at some point. And see, this is also that aspect, right, John, of like tuning out. Have you ever been in that, and like, this is the question here to you, all you listeners out there, have you ever been in that situation where you have a native Chinese speaker, they're speaking to you, and you can't understand most of what they're saying, and they kind of keep speaking, and you just kind of check out, right? You're just maybe got wide eyes, and you're like, uh-huh, 对,对, or something like that, but you really have no idea what they're saying. So this is a really important aspect, because you may be getting exposure to the language and they may be speaking to you. So you're having that auditory input, but you can't comprehend it. And so it just turns out to an incomprehensible experience, and it can be frustrating, right? So the really important aspect about this is that if you are trying to stay in the target language and you're starting to, want to speak and listen, it's very important that what's going on, that interaction, what you're speaking and what you're listening to is comprehensible to you. And that's going to make you help have a better experience, help you build stamina better, as opposed to if you're just thrown in an environment like they throw you into a lecture on, the geopolitical dynamics of, Southeast Asia or something, right? And it's all in Chinese. You're like, I have no idea what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, if it's way above your level, you really only have two choices. Either you keep asking them what something means, which is often not an option, or you just kind of check out. So yeah, it's got to be at your level. And if you're working on building endurance, whether it's with a teacher or whether it's with reading material, then you might have some control over that, and you can build at roughly the right level as you extend the length that you can handle.
Now, you said a magic word there, John. Reading material. Ha ha ha. That's something we have a little expertise on. But I want to bring this up because there are people that I've talked to that they say, oh, I'm going to go, take the HSK test, or maybe they have another Chinese exam that they're going to be working on. It could be for classes, whatever. And so they may be sitting for these exams and, for like the HSK, it's like 2 or 3 hours, John, right?
Something like that.
Well, what makes you think you can sit down and take like the HSK test for like hours when you can't sit down and read a book for like 30 minutes in Chinese? And you may like go through a practice. This is why, you do practice exams, and you may take one of those, and they're long, right? But you feel exhausted at the end. Well, one of the best indicators of success test prep is that reading speed, and we always talk about the reading speed and everything. And greater readers are a great way to build reading speed and stay in that target language for a good period of time, and help build that endurance. I've talked about him before. One of a Chinese teacher we've worked for, his name is Grant Brown. He's here in the United States. That's something he would do with his students in preparing for some of these Chinese exams they were preparing for. He'd say, all right, how many 15-minute segments can you spend, like reading in Chinese? And so they would, every 15 minutes they'd check the box, but they would try to extend that out and get two boxes out, and then, four boxes, so, 45 minutes and so forth. So in doing that will help you build that ability to stay in the language in type of an environment where you're getting actual comprehensible input through written format. And, you come across stuff you don't know, you can stop, you can reread. But the extensive reading aspect is an excellent way to help build that endurance.
And, of course, reading is super useful. You might just be reading Chinese for pleasure at some point, and you're probably going to be doing it for stretches of longer than 10 minutes. So, you want to build up that endurance. Another thing, though, that I see a lot is that people, even at like the intermediate level, they don't have much endurance for their own speaking. It's like they can only say one or two sentences, and then they kind of kick it back to their conversation partner. And they just listen for a while, and they make a comment, and then they just listen. So this is something that you could also try improving, being able to speak for longer stretches of time. And it can be really hard, especially if you're somewhat introverted. I can sympathize with that. But if you can't talk and like string together thoughts in a coherent manner for longer than like two sentences, then that's also something you can work on. And that's going to make your Chinese a lot better.
Yeah. And when you're doing that, the struggle is actually where you have the growth, right? You know, you might be one of like, you may be used to like explaining your job and where you're from or whatever, your family, things like that. But maybe now you have a unique idea on a perspective, or maybe something in current events. You know, what I usually find, John, is that, you know, when we get into discussions, when you have things that have a maybe a moral position, or, you know, a perspective, you know, that could be like more of a moral perspective, people can get very energized about that. And actually, that's a great opportunity when you're trying to speak in Chinese, is that, hey, you know, well, I have this actual perspective. I think like this is right or this is wrong. And now you have a lot of impetus, your reason that you want to explain yourself and you want to share your perspective and idea. That can be a great way to kind of get past that 1 to 2 sentence perspective on something.
Yeah, some people might be tempted in that kind of situation to just say 1 or 2 things and be like, that's all I'll say on that. Because it's hard. Mm-hmm. But this is where you get creative. You start giving examples to illustrate your point and just figuring out ways to get your point across and just trying to communicate. That kind of stretching is very useful for improving your Chinese.
So I think ultimately, John, as we're kind of talking through this, it's a little bit like to build that endurance, it is going to take work and there is going to be struggle. I referred this at the beginning of the episode about, you know, like Rocky. There's the class. If you guys have seen the movie Rocky, you know, it's, you know, dun, 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 dun. He's out there running down the street. He runs up the steps. You know, he's punching, you know, those big like cuts of meat, you know, in the meat locker, right? And he's just doing all these things. And he's like, he's really working hard because he's trying to build his endurance, his stamina, to get ready for the big fight. And to a degree, you know, we're going to have to do elements of that. Now, we don't have to be, you know, a Rocky champion per se. But, you know, you're going to have to proverbially get out there and run. You're going to have to proverbially, you know, get out there and, you know, climb the steps. And it will take some effort. And you're going to have to push through some discomfort if you're going to build that stamina.
And, Jared, I think the sports analogy is pretty easy to understand, even if you haven't seen Rocky.
Well, yeah, so there you go. I take whatever sports.
but one other thing I want to mention, though, is that as your level increases, your Chinese gets more and more advanced, you're going to need to put more time into your studies or into your practice, whatever you want to call it, in order to keep improving. So in the beginning, you can get away with 1 hour a week. But later on, you know, once you get to be advanced, you need to be spending longer periods of time reading, longer periods of time in discussion, longer periods of time, you know, watching something. Because just a little bit here and there might not even be enough to maintain your level.
Definitely. You know, and I can chime in on this one, John, because I've had a tutor now for about the last almost year, I believe, and 1-hour-long sessions. And I've been out of China, but with the coronavirus, I haven't been back there, almost 2.5 years now. And so I just don't have that many opportunities to speak Chinese in my area. And so it's like having this tutor at the beginning, yeah, it was almost like 1 hour. I'm like, you know, my Chinese is good enough to, you know, have conversations and everything. But at that hour, it's just kind of like clawing across the finish line, you know what I mean? And now it's like the hour, you know, at the end of the hour, I'm like, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm almost like energized, right? I'm like, I just had 1-hour-long conversation in Chinese with my tutor. And I'm ready to go home and, you know, woo, you know, go nail it. So it's definitely something I've even experienced recently just in looking back on, hey, you know, it's important to kind of maintain and keep things up. And yeah, 1 hour long is great for me. I can do longer now. I shouldn't say I should do longer now. 1 hour long is great for me. It's helped me to maintain and of course, build even a little more stamina in Chinese.
All right. So to wrap up our conversation today, just a few quick points. Like, number one, it is exhausting to spend time in Chinese, you know, either with a tutor or doing whatever. It's exhausting in the beginning, but you can build your stamina. And the longer you study Chinese, the more time you're going to want to devote to your studies. So you're going to want that endurance so that you can keep improving your Chinese.
That's right. So just, you know, so when you're out there and you're approaching those 30 minutes and you're like, oh, my brain feels full, right? Just think of Rocky, you know, out there, you know, working hard and getting stronger, building that endurance because, you know, you can do it, right?
Punching that meat.
Yeah, punch.
All right.
Careful on that one, John. All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is
All Set Learning, the Chinese Vocabulary Wiki.
Ooh. John, the Chinese Vocabulary Wiki? I'm aware of the Chinese Grammar Wiki and the Chinese Pronunciation Wiki, but please tell me about the Chinese Vocabulary Wiki.
Well, this is actually brand new, Jared. You can go online, you can find the Chinese Vocabulary Wiki at the place where you find your other Chinese wikis. And wow. This one has lots of vocabulary stuff. Right now, it has two main sections. The first one is HSK word lists, broken down all kinds of different ways to make it more convenient to access. The English definitions are all our own. They're learner-friendly. They're not, like, super long and, like, every possible meaning. They're the meanings you need at this level for HSK. So that's one thing, the HSK lists. And then there's the similar words comparisons. So, you know, the Chinese Grammar Wiki has some of this, but there's all these other words that, you know, it's not a grammar point. It's just there are these two words that are pretty similar, like Renshi and Zhidao, they both mean to know, but when is it one and when is the other? So there's lots of comparisons like this from elementary through intermediate, and we leave out all the kind of super hard and annoying ones that seem to find their ways into other books. We focus on the really useful ones.
Wow, John, this sounds like such an incredible resource. How much would I expect to pay for a resource like this?
I'm glad you asked. You should expect to pay nothing.
What?
Well, maybe nothing. You shouldn't expect that. But
that's cheap as free.
It's a free wiki. It's an all-set learning online resource that is free to access.
Wow. All right, now it's time for rants and raves. All right, John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rant. And, you know, I'm usually positive, but this is relevant to what we're just talking about. I kind of like these books that compare similar words, and so I've looked at many. And so many of them just bring up these really obscure words. And I don't understand why they think learners need to know the differences between two words that they would almost never use. Or maybe one of them is useful, and then the other one, you're just like, I've never heard of this word. And you're looking at it, and you're just like, why would I use this word? And I think it's kind of an extension of that habit that some teachers have where it's like, oh, you're advanced, but do you know this word? And they just start throwing out all these really hard words and these cheng yu, and that's not necessarily what you need right now just because it's something you don't know, right?
Yeah.
So focus on I+1, was just a little bit harder than your current level, and then something that you can incorporate into your current level of Chinese and then use it.
Well noted.
That's my rant.
Well, there's all those people doing that. Stop doing that, right? Or something.
You tell them, Jared. All right, so rant or rave, what do you got?
I got a rant, John. All right, and this rant is actually kind of about you. Ha ha! This is a good one.
Okay.
This came actually from an email, and I went back and listened. So we had it from a person who called themselves Podcast Enjoyer. Looks like their username is Crackman Stunt. Anyway, I don't know what that means, but he says, huge fan of the podcast, been listening to them chronologically, and just got to episode 30, which is roughly around the start of COVID. And it said, for a good laugh cry or trip through memory lane, listen to the segment. So I'm going to play back this segment here. You ready for this, John?
I am ready.
Which really brought it to the forefront, this distinction between foreign language learning materials and second language learning materials. And that was actually the novel coronavirus vocabulary. So the week I got back from my Chinese New Year vacation in Japan, and China was in the midst of the coronavirus craziness, my coworkers and I created some materials for learning novel coronavirus vocabulary. And we separated it into levels, A2, B1, B1 plus. And I wanted something that would be useful for all these foreigners in China that have a certain level of Chinese, and they have all this sudden exposure to this new vocabulary that they never learned before. And I wanted this to help them. So some people said to me, hey, this is great. Why don't you make like a course and put it online and anyone in the world can learn about the novel coronavirus vocabulary? It's like a big craze right now. Can you imagine how many people would want to study that? And my reply was, because it's not actually useful if you're not in China. If you're at a high level already, then okay, you need some vocabulary because you might want to discuss the situation with some Chinese friends. If you're an elementary or an intermediate learner, you're really going to learn a lot of highly technical terminology to talk about viruses and virus prevention methods. Because the truth is that this situation is not the new reality in China. It's going to pass. And you're going to learn that vocabulary, spend a lot of effort, and then the situation will go away and there will no longer be a context in which you need it. It's not like you're going to go around finding Chinese friends in the U.S. and be like, hey, let's talk about the coronavirus situation from 5 months ago. It's just not going to happen. So that's a good example of something that is a very useful and relevant second language learning topic, but it's not quite as useful, especially for the lower levels, in a foreign language context.
Oh, man, John, that did not age well. So
I'm laugh crying over here. but Jared, in my defense, all right, it actually changed. Like when the virus came back, we looked at our original word list and we realized that the way that we discuss it the second time is not the same as the first time.
Oh, really? How's that?
Like, for example, you heard me talking in English about the novel coronavirus. No one says that anymore. It's COVID, right? Yep, and the same thing happened in China. Originally, they were talking about Xinguan, but then later on, it's all about Yixing, you know, the epidemic situation. And like, there's lots of examples of that. So, all right, I can't see the future, so I was kind of wrong. But
yeah,
I was also kind of right.
That's okay, John. You know, 5 months, this whole thing will just blow over.
Yeah, totally. It can't happen again, right?
No, yeah.
No way.
Can't imagine.
No way.
My name is Tyler Chrysler. I am from Portland, Oregon. And when I was 24 years old, I came to China in the Northeast in a city called Dalian. And I was here for 3 years. I started out as an English teacher, and then I got into what we're doing now, which is social media.
Tyler's origin story is not uncommon. Came to China to teach English, then after learning the language, a cornucopia of opportunities opened up to him.
And I'm 38, so I've been in China for 14 years. Married a Chinese woman, and we have two kids together.
Tyler's enthusiasm for language and life is infectious. But early on, he approached learning Chinese with determination and resolve. And today, his life bears the fruit of his efforts. Stay with us.
All right, Ty, I got to start with a big question. Why did you start learning Chinese?
I was 24 years old. I had been working for 2 years for a company in Portland, Oregon. It was an international business thing. So it was a very international environment, which was awesome because I studied international business in school. And I really wanted to learn another language. So I was thinking Spanish or Mandarin. I mean, from what I've heard, if you can speak English, Mandarin, and Spanish, you can speak to like more than 90% of the world communicate in some way, shape, or form. So I looked for jobs, almost joined the Peace Corps.
Really?
I had a mortgage on a townhouse back in Portland, Oregon at that time. And so I had a little pressure to have some income. So I found a job in Ecuador, actually. And then I found some jobs here in China. And I came to China. They paid a little bit better, and I had that mortgage.
It seems like you were thinking of like doing Spanish, maybe, but maybe the opportunity, the money, almost like took you to China instead, and sort of like, all right, well, I guess I'll learn Chinese.
Yeah, and you got to respect the culture. You got to learn the language. I wanted to pay my bills on my own. I didn't want to call the HR of the school, hey, come down here and help me out. I wanted to be able to buy things on Taobao on my own. I wanted to go out and order food on my own, travel on my own. My first visit from family at that time was after 10 months here, and I got to escort dad and step around quite well.
Wow.
Like my Chinese wasn't perfect, but it was okay. I took my dad and stepmother to Beijing. We step into this Baozi place by the train station. Thinking back, you know, if it were now, I'd never taken to a place like this. It's kind of a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
It was a hole in the wall. There's like baozi and then these steamed dumplings as well. And we had a beer. And then I said, you guys want to try Chinese baijiu, you know, this Chinese wine, just for fun. And so we started drinking. And the three of us are having fun. And there's another table in there. They seemed like they were migrant workers or from the countryside, something. We were near the train station.
Uh-huh.
And in my horrible Chinese at the time, we're communicating back and forth and just simple little things like, do you like your life here? And we're like, yeah, I love my life here. And I'm 24 years old, been here for 10 months. We're in Dalian. Then we started sharing things with each other and they shared this century egg. They had a century egg.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you might have to describe that for our listeners.
Century eggs are, if you don't know what they are, I mean, I don't really know what they are. They're like fermented eggs. It's really...
They're like buried in clay or something, right? You know, they're like...
It was a goose egg or a duck egg. It was massive.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
It's like the size, half the size of my head, it felt like. And this lady hands it over to me and she's like, try this. And I'm like, okay, I really
don't
want
to. You're drinking Baijiu at this point. Sure, right. We'll try it.
Yeah, I'm buzzing. And I just take a big bite and I'm like, yeah, you know, you don't want to offend anybody. And they loved it. My dad and stepmom didn't try the egg, but I think I had at least half this thing.
And those things are like really salty, aren't they?
So the really salty one is like the duck egg or the goose egg. This century egg is a whole different...
Maybe I haven't had one then.
So century eggs, they're actually good with other stuff. If they're cut up and then put with some tofu and other sauce and stuff like that, they can be quite good. Eating it just straight up like that was a little bit rough. They smell, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're just being really respectful and friendly. And by the time this thing ends, it's so funny. We're hugging each other, you know, kisses on the cheek. And my stepmom, she goes to kiss this guy on the cheek when we're leaving. And they accidentally kissed on the mouth. And this guy had like, you know, half of his teeth in his mouth. It was a great time. It was a lot. It's one of those Chinese moments that was just hard to explain how awesome it was.
That's awesome. Well, that sounds like a pivotal moment, right? Not just seeing your stepmom kiss a, you know, migrant worker, but, you know, also being able to like have that conversation in Chinese, right?
But yeah.
But what kind of kept your like focus, like saying, hey, you've been in China now for what, 14 years?
So 14 years now.
Yeah.
Came in 2008.
And so why did you decide to stay? I mean, at this point, you've been teaching English, but you decide, hey, I'm going to continue to work on my Chinese and I want to stick around.
Yeah. So the original plan was to be here for 2 or 3 years, get a good grip of the language, and then go back and get a job back in Portland or Seattle or San Francisco. And then I just kind of stayed for another year. I was there for 4 years. And then my dad came again with my sister. And we had this serious talk about, you know, getting serious about looking for a job, coming back. And then I started looking for a job. But at that time, it was a month into the job search. And then I bumped into my future wife.
Wow.
Yeah. So I moved to Shanghai for a job. Did that for 6 months. Didn't work out. I came back. I was here for another 6 months with no connection with this gal. And I was getting off work one night with a buddy of mine. And I see she's about to get out of a taxi. So I go and knock on the window and I open the door for her. I was like, do you remember me? I mean, she was a really good friend before. So we added each other's WeChat and then kept in touch with her. And then we saw each other, kind of went for a date a week later. And then we just kind of hit it off.
Wow. Was your relationship in English or is it like in Chinese or Chinglish or what?
Good question. She spoke no English at all. It was really bad. Wow. But when I met her, I was already here for 3 years. So my Chinese is okay. She had no interest in learning English. I wanted to teach her English, though. And then we dated for 6 months. And then my mom visited. I had to translate everything. It was really tough, very stressful.
Wow.
And all my wife now could say was like, welcome to China. No joke. That was it. And then my mother went back home and our relationship just kind of deteriorated. And after 6 months, we broke up.
Oh.
So we dated for a year. We broke up and then I went back to America for a little bit. And after 4 months of being apart, we talked about getting back together and we did. And then I said, one of the things we need to do moving forward, though, you got to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you can't communicate with my family or friends that don't speak Chinese. And so I had tried to teach her before we'd initially broken up. And I think that led to tears one time in a coffee shop on her end. So this time we didn't do it that way. We got her signed up for some classes and she's great. Her English is great now.
Wow.
She picked it up real quick. And wow. She's really, really good now. Communicate. My family, they all love her. She's awesome.
That's a cool story. So that's a little bit of a lot of the stories I've heard is, you know, guys, oh, I'm going to learn Chinese so I can communicate with her family. But it was a little bit of that opposite, right? But how did that impact your relationship? And I mean, obviously, it sounds like she was able to develop a relationship with your parents.
100%. They all just love her. She's super fun. She learning English was a really good thing for her too. Like, helped her meet different people from all over the world and more diversity and more positivity and challenging herself. I think it was a really good thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
And even now we get two kids where I only speak English with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
She mostly speaks Chinese with the kids, but mm-hmm. between she and I, we probably speak 70 to 80% Chinese, 20, 30% English. Anything I say, she understands.
That's amazing.
We just live in China, so it's habitual where we speak more Chinese to each other.
Well, something I'm interested, Tyler, you said you took learning Chinese very seriously. So what were you seriously doing to learn the language?
Yeah. So when I first got to China, I tried a couple different things. I spoke no Chinese. I tried like this. It wasn't Chinese pot. It was, Pimsleur, I think it starts with a P.
Pimsleur? Rosetta Stone?
Yes.
Yeah,
Pimsleur. Okay. That's yeah. it. Thank you. And it did not work for me. I tried it before I came to China and it just doesn't work. Like learning a language, if you're not in the environment, it must be so difficult. Like I tried a class with like four or five other people. That's a horrible idea because everybody learns at different paces and some people don't take it very seriously, which was very frustrating for me. Some people would come in there hungover. And I was talking to an American friend of mine from New York and he recommended one-to-one tutor classes.
Mm.
That's what I did. And it is awesome. And you got to find a good teacher. Three classes a week for 60 minutes at first because it's exhausting.
Yeah.
Learning a language is exhausting. Like it will really drain you mentally, physically. 60 minutes at first, then we moved to 90 minutes. And we just talked. She had a notebook and she would write things down for me. It was we weren't like following any course.
Mm.
And it worked great. It was just like conversation slowly. And she spoke English, but I don't know if that's 100% necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried not to. I sometimes would have to tell her like, speak less English.
Mm-hmm.
You have to really coach your teacher to cater your needs.
Yeah.
Like you also have to be very self-disciplined to know when to talk to the teacher and say, we need to be more intense with the Chinese because they sometimes will try to practice the English with you. That happens a lot.
It's not what we're paying you for.
Yeah. Anyway, that worked. So three classes a week, 60 to 90 minutes. I did that for like 2 years. On top of that, I was studying on my own,
mm-hmm.
which is crucial. I would handwrite flashcards, English on one side and pinyin on the other. This is before I could read Chinese characters. And it really worked. I would do these flashcards in coffee shops, on the bus, wherever. Mm-hmm. And then I had like 2,000 flashcards, which was horrible. And then I found this app called Anki, which is also unbelievable. If you guys don't know about Anki, it's like $25. But I think it's free on your computer, actually. Unbelievable for doing vocabulary. Like, I can't recommend it highly enough. A-N-K-I, Anki.
Listener, beware. There's a bunch of counterfeit Anki apps out there, so you got to make sure you get the right one.
And then on top of that, I found ChinesePod. It was amazing. I listen to these things all the time. I enjoyed it. I learned so much from them. And then I learned Chinese characters on my own through a couple books.
Oh, really?
My other big one was I found a roommate. I lived with a guy for a year and a half, also mm-hmm. from Liaoning province. And he's like one of my best Chinese friends. And he's in Beijing now, which is a bummer.
Wow, that's amazing. So you said you took it seriously. Sounds like it. You spent a lot of time and effort.
And a big part of that is also being careful about who you surround yourself with. Like everywhere has foreigners and it's super easy to gravitate toward what's easy. So you'll meet a lot of foreigners in China that only hang out with foreigners, really. that's not going to work if you want to learn the language.
You talked earlier about like your initial driving reason to learn Chinese was, I guess, survive, you know, and you talked about the element of respect. Did you feel like your reasons to continue learning had changed at all along the way? And what do you think are your reasons now for continue to, I guess, improve and learn your Chinese?
So initially, survival, respect for the culture. And that just kind of keeps on going. Because I was 24 when I started learning the language, and I would consider myself fluent in Mandarin, probably at the time of like 3, 4, 5 years into my journey here. But that doesn't mean my Chinese is perfect. Even still, I mean, I run into things I'm learning or being challenged with. Language is for a lifetime.
Yeah.
And everybody learns languages at different paces.
Mm-hmm. I've heard rumors, Ty. You have to confirm these are true or false, that you also speak a local dialect there in Dalian. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. I knew that was going to come up in this conversation. And dialect is awesome. And I think that if you live here in China, you should highly consider learning the local dialect. Mandarin, number one, of course. If you speak that, you can speak to Chinese people. But beyond that, even a little bit of dialect will go a long way with regards to connecting with the locals. Because a lot of foreigners speak Chinese now. I mean, speaking really good Chinese is rare.
Mm-hmm.
But getting by, you know, with survival Chinese, a lot of people can do that now. Yeah. But dialect, I mean, that just takes you to a whole new level. And it's a different way to connect with people. And people look at you differently if you can speak local dialect, I think.
I've experienced that in business back in Shanghai. If I had an employee who's Shanghainese and she speaks Shanghainese, if I could go to a government office or something and I've got a problem, if they speak in Shanghainese to that government official, things go a lot better. So yeah. I have even seen that even on the Chinese side of things. So tell me a little bit, is this more of a dialect or is it more of a different language? Do you know what I mean? How closely related is it to Chinese? And how did you go about learning this?
I'm very fortunate in that Dalian local dialect is not like Shanghainese.
Mm.
Shanghainese is a totally different language. Like nothing to do with Mandarin.
There's some, but yeah, there's not a lot. The tone structure is like totally different too. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds completely foreign to me. I don't understand any of it.
Yeah, sure. So how did you go about just like acquiring?
How did I do that? I'll tell you. I started dating my wife and she's from here. And so before I sounded like I was from the Northeast. My teacher is from Heilongjiang, which is way up north, which is where they speak apparently the most standard Mandarin. And then my roommate for a year and a half, that guy, he's from Benxi, which is in Liaoning. So just very Dongbeihua, Northeast sound. And then my wife, she is local. When she's with her local friends, man, they really rock it out. And so I thought it was fun. I thought it was kind of cute. I would start to mimic and just play with it and joke with it with her. In Mandarin, you say, 我跟你说, it's like, let me tell you something. 我跟你说. Hmm. And then here in Dalian, it's just slightly different. 我跟你说. So, 说 is 说. Little things like that I started to play with, and then they just stuck. And then I would get curious, what did you guys say? Like when she's talking to her friends or when she's talking to her mom and dad. What was that? And I would write them down. I'd put them in my Anki. I would flashcard it.
Wow.
Boom. Oh, yeah. No mess around. Like, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, tell me then a little bit of what you're doing now. You have some social media channels. So tell me a little bit, like, what are you producing? I mean, what are these audiences? I assume it's all in Chinese as well. And how did you get into, like, doing this?
Yeah, it's all in Chinese. We do social media for comedy skits, kind of stuff you'd see on TikTok, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff we do is food. So I will cook food and eat it with different people, with my wife or with my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all in Chinese. A friend of mine recommended doing it because he thought I was funny. And my first video was probably 7 years ago on a platform called Kuaishou. And I made a short little thing that was like 12 seconds long. And it was all in local dialect. And then built up a fan base. And then we just kept going with it. For a long time, we weren't making any money with it at all. Because in China, everything went from TV and radio just died, you know, 5 years ago. And everything's moving towards social media. We initially did it because it was fun. It was a hobby. And we also enjoy making people laugh. I mean, we get private messages from people saying like a tough time in my life. And I just watched 2 hours of your videos last night. Wow. Really brought me out of a slump. Like, or I had a crappy day and I saw this. Or with COVID, a lot of people, they lost their appetite. That happens to some people. It didn't happen to me. It's all fun stuff. It's all light. Nothing deep, nothing sensitive. We don't touch any of that stuff, which is probably a good idea, being where we're at.
In China. Yeah. Wow. That's exciting. I think this is all really interesting, Tyler. And is there any story that was really influential to you, I guess, in maintaining your motivation and your desire to continue to progress?
Sure. Even though I was working really hard and really positive about it, you still come up against roadblocks or people with negative attitudes about it. Along the journey, I had to be selective about Chinese friends I was making. I was teaching English too. So you run into a lot of Chinese people that have learned English or really want to learn English, that are staff or people you're around a lot. And in China, you're going to bump into Chinese people that only want to speak Chinese to you. Even if your Chinese is way better than their English, they really want to practice their English, which is great. Mm-hmm. But you need to decide whether or not that's for you, if that's where you want to go with it. I was very careful about that.
Mm.
And there's this language power struggle that actually John Pasden wrote an article about.
Yes, yes.
On a blog that he had years back.
Sinosplice.com.
Correct. And my buddies here that have learned Chinese, we all can relate to that article so well. Like, you're going to run into people that just want to speak English with you. And that's really tough and sometimes very demotivating. It's like, probably 2 months or 3 months into me being here. So we're talking back in 2008. And I went to pay my electricity and water. And it was, I swear, I was in there for at least 20 minutes. Wow. Trying to do something that should have taken 20 seconds. And I'm not calling the staff at my school to help me out. And there were two ladies and a guy, and the guy didn't like me. Oh. He didn't like what was going on. Maybe he didn't like foreigners, I don't know. But the other two ladies, they're just so sweet and helpful and patient. Mm-hmm. And I got it done. I got my questions answered, and I got it done. And another thing I needed to do was book this water cooler container, one of those huge, you know, 10-gallon...
Tong shui, right?
You know,
bottled water. The ones that go like in the office water cooler thing.
Yes, office water cooler thing. And you can get a delivery kind of thing. And it was just getting this thing worked out. Oh. But I got it done, and they just loved it. And like, wow. I would go in there my first year, and I'd sometimes just chit-chat with them for a little bit. It's these little things, I don't know, they always say it's like the best things. They definitely take time and can come back. So if you're learning Chinese, like, keep at it and just stay strong mentally.
There's part of that shared struggle, right? But the reward is when you actually are able to communicate, right? And it's like, wow, you did it. Well, Ty, what advice would you give to someone who's starting to learn Chinese right now?
I would say keep listening to this podcast, stay motivated, learn from guys like you and John Pasden. And even when you guys were putting out your books, I would use them for learning my Chinese reading.
Oh, really?
Graded readers. And Chinese Pod was big for me too. That was a motivator.
Well, Ty, this has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story, your experience with us. And, you know, it's been really insightful.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Jared. I appreciate it. And good luck to all of you listeners out there with learning Chinese and learning about Chinese culture. It's so awesome. It's a blast.
Well, Ty, if people want to see some of your videos or what you're doing on social media, where can they go?
So TikTok is the international version. We're not on there. We're on Douyin, the local version, and Bilibili.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
You can find me. My name is, it's a Chinese name. Maybe you can write it in the notes. I'll send it to you.
We'll put a link in the show notes. So if you want to find Ty's stuff, you can go to the show notes, click there, and see what he's doing in Chinese.
Crazy.
All right, Ty. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to be here on our podcast and wish you all the success here in your endeavors in the future.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, carpenter, scrapbooker, developer, dancer, professor, bride, groom, and that one guy named Charles. You can subscribe in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at MannerCompanion.com or tag us on social media, hashtag MannerCompanion. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is Kaiser Guo at SubChina, and our interview editor is Dominic Edgley. And I'd like to thank our guest interview, Tyler Kreitzler, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Pastner. See you next time.